Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Darren, what should we talk about? What do you want to talk about? I want to talk about Cody Rhodes and Paul Heyman to start off tonight's show. I love that segment. I thought it accomplished so much, maybe a little too much by the end, which I can explain a little bit. But I thought this continued a decades-long streak of so many wrestlers who can point to something that they did on air with Paul Heyman as their best talking segment of their career. I haven't had time to, you know, reflect on all of Cody's work over the years, but I have a feeling this will be remembered and it would rank at the top of most people's list. This was, it had Cody's quirks, but it also had focus and purpose and pacing. Pulled from a backstory, not just for the sake of it, but for a much larger purpose. Again, which I'll talk about the specifics of what I thought it accomplished, and it just was compelling viewing to watch. I still think people are excited to see Sami Zayn wrestle Roman, but this did, I think, effectively counter the notion that people might have had coming out of SmackDown that Cody winning the Rumble sort of getting in the way of the story that everyone wants to focus on. And I think it created a story that can live alongside the next couple weeks of the Sami Zayn Roman Reigns Elimination Chamber story. How about you?
I thought we were going to start talking about the Baron Corbin JBL split, but okay.
It was a tough call, Darren. I know what you lobbied for, but
absolutely no. That promo segment, that was excellent. That was a definite highlight of the show. Both guys just tremendous in their delivery. As you said, compelling. That's the exact word for it. I was just transfixed on what both of them were going to say. They both looked like they were going to tear up at different points. They were emotional. And I imagine some of that what language they said would get to you, no matter, even
there
wasn't
a sincere tear in Paul Heyman's eyes in that segment, but the fans were buying it. I loved it.
Yes.
I mean, not that Heyman is void of emotion. I'm just saying Heyman's tears, because Heyman doesn't tear up.
No.
Constantly, but Cody does. I think Cody kind of gets emotional for the sake of it being best for his character too. Yes, I'm being cynical. I don't want to take away from the segment because what they said was true. I just think they, added a little bit of emotional accessibility than might have naturally happened backstage. But like I said, that's neither here nor there. I got a kick out of the fans chanting for Heyman because they thought he was getting genuinely emotionally moved by Cody, who quote surprised him with these personal stories. I love when you can take a crowd and just pull them in like that, and they did.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. So in the history, I mean, it's an augmentation for the convenience of the storyline when it comes to the history, but it's true history. It's true. It's not just made up. I mean, I don't know if Heyman had a final conversation with Dusty where Cody's his favorite son. I'm thinking poor Dustin is going, wait, who's, what did I say? Why, what am I? I'm not
my
even
very
here.
First thought.
Yeah.
Poor
yeah.
Dustin.
And I thought, Cody was like, it was funny because I thought Cody's like, oh, good. I never knew if he liked Dustin or Cody better. And no one had ever told me that before, but I'm so glad. Like, I had mixed feelings about that, but it was all a setup for the Reigns was the son I never had, which was great. And I did not see it coming, and I loved it. Go ahead.
I didn't either. And yeah, back to the Dustin thing, I was just like, oh, Paul, you finally confirmed what I've thought all these years. At first, because I didn't know where it was going.
I don't want to stir trouble, but I always heard the opposite.
Well, But yet, I didn't see that coming. And they did such a good job of playing off of history, things that could have really happened and things that may very well have happened, just to come up with that home run of a segment that plays off of the Bloodline storyline. It plays into it as well. And I was wondering how they're going to transition over, because people could have the backlash with Sammy, of course, and this is a good way of getting them out of it by having another compelling fact-based storyline. Just kudos to them for that.
Oh, totally. You know, one of the, you know, because Cody's name was booed when Roman mentioned it on Friday. And when that happened, I just thought, okay, time to summon all the wise men in WWE. You know, and that includes Cody, Heyman, Paul Levesque, the top writers. Let's figure out what we can do to slow this before it gets out of hand. And I don't think it was necessarily in danger of getting out of hand. They have plenty of time after Elimination Chamber to course correct. It's not going to be 6 weeks of this. It's, you know, the Elimination Chamber's right around the corner. But it's not a good sign. And because of Cody's history, it you want to take it seriously. And for Heyman to walk out there and create a plausible, believable story that Cody is not a product of nepotism, but in fact, without going down that road of, you know, that everybody's doing, you know, the gun sons in AEW saying, Billy, you're always on the road. You ignored us. You didn't raise us. You know, we hear that from kids in wrestling so often. It's become a little trite, a little cliche, a little overplayed. He didn't quite go that far, but he did just say, you know, Dusty's job after he was broke and Paul Heyman gave him a break, which Cody appreciates and respects him for, Dusty earned a living at the Performance Center, and it just so happens that it included Bayley and Becky and Seth and Roman. Dusty helped groom them. He helped train them. He helped, what was it, prep and what was his phrase he said four times?
Oh,
prep and
I don't recall.
Prep and maybe, well, no, prep and prepare are the same word. Anyway, not that important. But with, you know, it's Heyman, so he's going to hit the same beats and the same rhythm over and over, and he did. And to frame Cody as trained and prepped, nothing fancy. I just looked it up, but now I feel better. he trained and prepped Seth. He trained and prepped Bayley. He trained and prepped Becky. Kevin Owens, too, so he did it five times. And he basically took away from fans thinking, ah, Cody, he's getting this. He got number 30 in the Rumble. He's getting the main event because he's the son of a guy who had power. And Sammy didn't have that. And we love Sammy more than Cody. Like, just get those thoughts out of people's heads. And Heyman did it. And then he did it in such a, like, vile way. Like, people were pulled into the emotions of this walk down memory lane and mutual respect for Dusty. And WWE has turned that into an art form. You know, this admiration for Dusty being so public, and they ring that they play that hand so often when it comes to Dusty, and so the foundation was there for this to work, and it's such a juxtaposition of Heyman, who's normally in the background as a sniveling evil guy who's being awful to Sami Zayn lately, and yet if Cody and Paul are sharing memories of Dusty, fans are going to start chanting Heyman's name and buying into it. And then at the end, you know, that great line, it just, you're rooting for Cody, but you're also rooting against Reigns and Heyman, you know, just as much because of what they did in the segment. It checks so many boxes. Cody's good at welling up and, you know, his voice cracking and crying. That's, you know, one of his go-to things he does in promos, you know, and you know, Ric Flair does that well too, and others, but those two come to mind. And this was a perfect scenario for that to play out. This, you know, some of Cody's quirks were there, but those can be endearing, framed right. And I thought this framed every bit of what Cody is what's so charismatic and makes him feel like a big star who kind of owns the ring. And it presented them and framed them as a strength, as opposed to what can sometimes work against Cody, because he can come across as maybe taking himself too seriously or being too grandiose. You know, the suits and the pyro and the, you know, in AEW, the elevator, you know, up to the stage and all the stuff that sort of worked against him. And here, those traits that lead him down that lane on promos where he can maybe lose sight of being the son of the common man and play into people's beliefs that, you know, he isn't a common man. And they took those traits and just tweaked them enough and turned it into the stellar segment. Anyway, Darren, go ahead.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, you mentioned Cody's quirks. And one of them, he came off, you know, after on the heels of being his name being booed on SmackDown, he came out and immediately went with the, so what do you guys want to talk about tonight? And I'm like, oh, here we go. This is getting a little cutesy. And like, yeah. I'm a guy that just will improvise for you. And what do you want to talk about? And I was like, here we go. And then they turned it on its ear. And I wonder if they even did that intentionally just to say, here we go again. And then we're going to give you another direction.
Yeah.
And I one other key element of that promo is I think it humanized Cody a bit because, you know, he comes out with the big entrances and everything, and he tells this story, and I had not heard it before. They were down, and I don't know the truth to it, they were down to their last $100. That's a story people can relate to. You know, you see the guy with all these fancy clothes on and, you know, the entrances. He's like, wow, not too long, all in the grand scheme of things, not that long ago. This guy and his family were down to $100, and his father was doing car commercials.
I've interviewed ex-creative team members, and they've said Dusty would often talk about behind the scenes, I wish I'd saved my money. I thought the money would keep coming in. I spent it like it would keep coming in. And, you know, it was on the days where it was not as fun to be at work, or it was, you know, having to sit around and wait for Vince McMahon to show up at a meeting or call, and Vince would be hours late and it'd be in the middle of the night. Writing team members went through that stuff. And when they would talk with Dusty about that, and Dusty had his own challenges, kind of having to just show up and clock in and do a job when he was used to, you know, private jet with Jim Crockett Promotions when he was Booker, and you know, it contributed to the bankruptcy of Jim Crockett Promotions and having to sell out to Ted Turner because they were on the brink. And so Dusty lived the high life, and he was the star, and he was selling out buildings, and he was such a special mega star, nationally, but especially, you know, amplified in regions of the country. Wherever he went, people knew who he was, and he just had this special X factor to him. And now he's just needing a paycheck to get by. So, you know, whether that specific of Cody and the $100 is exactly correct, it doesn't really matter. The spirit of it is correct. And they did have to rebuild from the ground up. And you're absolutely right in pointing out it makes Cody seem like he's less like, frankly, Shane and Stephanie came across, and they played into that. Oh, you know, they've had, you know, the nicest car when they turned 16 that any kid could hope for. You know, that's the impression you have. And Cody portrays himself as a star, but in the role he's in now, it's important to portray him as a self-made star who had to kind of pick up the pieces of his burgeoning career, or he had to create success on his own because his dad did not hand him anything other than the family name. And Cody kind of had to rebuild it. They don't talk a lot about it, but the Rhodes name was damaged, you know, by the time Cody got in the business too, or it was in the process of being rehabbed. But in the 90s, it was damaged. So, I mean, again, you know, I say if you can mix truth in with something that's embellished or fictional to whatever percentage, and it enhances the best story you can tell, then use that truth. I often say, I don't think you should inject truth into a story that makes a fictional story worse just because it has a truthy edge to it. I think that's dumb, and I think it's overdone. But in this case, that vibe of truth, the truthiness of the stories they told, really added to that segment, because people who know about the history of the Rhodes family and, frankly, Heyman and ECW are just nodding along going, wow, you're adding granular detail to something that I knew was roughly true.
Exactly. Excellent point. And I do have one additional thing to add to this is, why is Cody mad because of what Paul said at the end? Is he mad because Paul just made that up and is trying to play mind games with him? Or is he mad because he knows deep down Paul's telling the truth, because maybe Dusty said something to him about, oh, that Roman is a great student or whatever. And he knows that deep down, Dusty did really say that. And that's something that can be explored down the line.
I think we are to believe Heyman made it up to pull the rug out from under the moment that he and Cody were having, and that Paul used the memory of Cody's dad and the emotions tied up inside Cody over his dad and the journey through life that he had with him. And Heyman brought his guard down, shared real life moments, bonded with Cody, all for a mic drop moment. And my opinion is we're not supposed to believe that Dusty said that. We're to believe Paul Heyman knew what the most cruel thing is he could say after bringing Cody to tears by sharing that Dusty said he was his favorite son. Now, the one flaw in that is Cody's joy at hearing Heyman say Dusty said he was his favorite son does come at the expense of Dustin.
Yes.
So it's not, you know.
That's,
I mean, there is
storytelling.
There is that, but nevertheless, yeah, it worked.
Yeah, it did. Overall, yes, I'm sure. I mean, we can nitpick the little flaws, but yeah, overall, a tremendous segment.
So here's my question. Did they make people want to see Cody versus Reigns so much that it took a little bit away from the Sami Reigns match, which was so red hot after last week? Or did it give away in that sort of meta sense that I think many WWE viewers have in watching the product, which is, I'm going to suspend my disbelief, pull me in, make me believe, just like a good TV series or a good movie or a good play. I'm wrapped up in things. But deep down, I know that it's kind of, you know, that it's planned, you know, it's not just, it's not real life. And did they send those signals to fans that Sammy doesn't have a chance in hell to beat Roman for the title? Even if they kind of knew it already, they just don't want to have that confirmed. Did this segment do such a good job building up Cody against Roman, little under 2 months from now, that it actually did build up Cody, but hurt all the focus and excitement and momentum of the Sammy Roman match? Because WWE is not going to have time to convince fans that Sammy has a chance to beat Roman. Let's watch how Sammy comes up short. That's the selling point for the Chamber. It's going to be in Montreal with this crazy crowd. Come for the spectacle, but don't get your hopes up at all for a title change. Do you think this segment did kind of create that resignation amongst even Sammy fans?
I think it definitely did take it down a little bit, confirm what people already knew, as you said, but it did take away from it a little bit. By the time Montreal rolls around, though, the fans will be so into that story and everything. It won't necessarily matter that night. Something almost makes me believe they did it intentionally. Just, you guys know Sammy isn't winning, right? Just kind of sending that message a little bit to make it so obvious that Cody is going to be facing Roman, and this is, we're putting you on notice, so don't be too let down when Sammy wins. Maybe just a pinch of that a little bit.
Yeah. WWE doesn't like to build up a babyface doing something that they're not going to accomplish. They don't like building up a match that's going to end before the match happens. If there's a big match on a TV show and they haven't hyped it up, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, why didn't they mention this? Well, it's because they're going to do a non-finish. They're going to, like, have, you know, a attack, or it's going to be, there's going to be a run-in right away or something. They don't like to build up fans for disappointment. So I am curious the next couple Fridays how Sammy's quest to beat Roman is ultimately framed. That segment with Heyman and Cody was great. It crossed my mind, should at the end Cody have leaned in and said to Paul, I look forward to giving Roman his rematch after I beat Sammy at WrestleMania for the championships that Sammy takes from Roman at the Chamber. Something along those lines, so that Cody in the end is going, I think Sammy's going to beat your guy, but I'll graciously give him a rematch after WrestleMania. Would that have confused the issue too much? And made fans start thinking about something other than Cody Reigns at the end, and I get that argument, or would it have been better and sort of gracious for Cody to not look like, well, I paid lip service to Sammy winning, but now my focus is entirely on taking it for granted that, of course, it'll be Roman.
I had that very thought that, he didn't mention Sammy here at the end, but with the way it was so emotionally charged, you kind of just had to cut to the chase and not get all cute to you with the words and everything and include Sammy because he was no longer the story. So I understand it was just smoother just to get right to it and say, I'm going to beat your guy. And And it just made it a better story and also sent the message that Sammy's winning. But it was better to do it that way because anybody in that situation would be so emotionally charged up. They were like, I want to beat him.
Yeah, yeah. This is a good problem for WWE to have. I mean, it's not often we're sitting here after the Royal Rumble going, oh, my God, WWE has these two, now I would argue, two red-hot opponents for their world champion in successive pay-per-views. And I'm not saying that should be the mic drop moment on the Reigns-Cody build, you know, like where it's now it's just video packages for 2 months, but they don't have to do much more than that. You know, I am curious. And I said, like, and you can check the tape, people, as they say. I was like, I you know, as much as all the focus is on Sammy and Cody has this uphill battle to not be booed or to not be overshadowed by Sammy, I'm really looking forward if Cody wins the Rumble, because it was before the Rumble, and I was, like most people, assuming he would, I was really looking forward to seeing a change up at the dynamic with the Bloodline playing off of somebody different. It's been so Sammy and KO focused lately, and that's such a talented group. And this gave Heyman a chance to go from making great facial expressions and body language in the background and just being sort of at the mercy of Roman's moods to being the Paul Heyman who is the alpha microphone performer and carrying a segment not subtly in the background, but at the forefront, and bringing out the best in Cody and understanding Cody's strengths and weaknesses and incorporating that into the plan and the execution of it is great. And that's, so we saw the beginning of it. So now the next stage is Roman and Cody interacting. And I don't know how you top this segment, but this was a really, really good start.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to top. As you said, you don't have to do much more. And you kind of alluded to something earlier. Was this too early to have this home run segment? Because where do you go from here? I mean, it was so good and so emotional. Is this something that would have been better served till after Elimination Chamber?
It is a argument I think some people will want to make now. And I just say this segment was so good. Let's trust that they got more in them in a couple weeks and that there'll be some ebb and flow. We still have the Judgment Day thing with Cody to divert him a little bit. But we didn't get that tonight other than a passing comment, but I think what Heyman and Cody would say is there's more where that came from. Just relax, settle in, hopefully. But they also might be sweating bullets backstage going, oh my God, how are we going to top this? We peaked too early. So we'll see. But you know what? If they feel that way, that just means they're going to put even more thought into it. Great wrestling matches are great. But it's the journey that the characters are on, pulling from the history of characters with rich history. And Heyman and Cody have a rich history. We didn't even mention that Cody alluded to AEW as overtly as anyone ever has. And that was great. And again, that's one of those moments that says, this is a shoot, brother, without the cliche of this is a shoot, brother. It just worked in the sense that it didn't feel like it was done for effect. It was done to say, Paul, you and I are both disruptors. Me more recently, you back in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, we're disruptors. And we bond over that. And it added to the idea that they were sharing a moment. And it was almost like, what's Roman going to think about Heyman and Cody being so tight here? Of course, but in the end, it was all a setup to pull the rug out from under Cody like that. All right. We'd love to hear what you think of this. So we're going to pause, formally introduce the show, and then bring calls and emails into it. We do have an on-site correspondent, Sean, who we will be hearing from later on. And I'm really excited to talk to him about what it's like in the building for Cody, the ebb and flow of emotions, both for his ring entrance and then the segment itself. And then even after they went off air, you know, what kind of reaction there might have been during the commercial break. So that'll be coming up later. Just settle in. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, February 6th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website, pwtorch.com, and also the host of various podcasts, including the aptly named Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, and also some VIP shows like our post-pay-per-view and PLE roundtables that we've been doing since 2003, doing podcasting before the word podcasting was a word, and also the Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, the Wade Keller Hotlines, and more. Go VIP to hear all of my podcasts throughout the week and also our great team. We have a great variety of other podcasts on the VIP lineup. You can see them at pwtorch.com/govip, pwtorch.com/govip. You can also subscribe directly on your iPhone within the native Apple Podcast app. Search PW Torch. You'll see the black logo show up with PW Torch VIP. You can subscribe to all of our latest VIP shows, plus as a bonus, get these shows with the ads and plugs edited out. And you can do that with your Apple account. It's as frictionless of a sign-up process as you'll get in the premium podcast sphere, and it is there for you. If you're on your iPhone right now for $9.99 a month, you get a free day trial, 3 or 4 days, I think. Go sign up there and see what it's like to be able to listen to these shows in a streamlined fashion without the ads and plugs, without those breaks, and also all the VIP exclusive content, including, by the way, and this is so fun to do because I get to go back and listen to these, are my our 18 years ago VIP shows. Throughout the week, we run our podcast from the year 2005 right now. We're marching through the year 2005 with early Bruce Mitchell audio shows, Real Deal with Pat McNeil, post-pay-per-view roundtables. We're putting up the Rumble roundtable from 2005 this week. Wade Keller Hotlines with a ton of behind-the-scenes news and insight from WWE, but also TNA and early Ring of Honor and other places. Nowhere else are you going to get a collection of podcasts from that era with that insider perspective that comes with a VIP membership. So lots of cool current analysis, but also a lot of retro stuff going back 18 years. So go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip gives you full details. The other voice you've heard so far on the show is Darren Lilly. He is a pwtorch.com contributor. He covers the Impact Wrestling beat, and it is great to have him back in the co-host chair. Darren, welcome.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here. Looking forward to seeing what everybody else thinks about this show tonight.
I am too. You, by the way, are one of those podcasters. You cover Impact Wrestling. So people are into Impact Wrestling and don't get a big enough dose here on the free lineup, the Wade Keller shows, or even for that matter, in the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup that are also free. Darren does a great job covering Impact. So check those out as a VIP member. Cool. All right. Let's give out the phone number and the email and then get rolling through calls. Our call-in number, if you're live streaming the show and you want to be on the show, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Push 1 when you call. That flags you on our switchboard and says you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you're attending a future Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown and want to be an on-site correspondent on the show like Sean will be later, email that same address, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Put the city and date in the subject line. It just helps a little bit for me in terms of staying organized and getting back to you about being on the show. Okay. Oh, last thing. If you want to find our live stream, because most of you download the show after the fact, you know, in this case, Tuesday morning, and thank you for doing that. If you do want to live stream the show, you're welcome to. We invite you to, and that's the best way for you to also participate with phone calls. The way to do that is at wadekellerpostshow.com. You can navigate to the live stream right after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. We start roughly 5 minutes after the shows go off the air. The other way is just a direct link to that show is at pwtorch.com. In my TV report covering Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, you'll find the link to that night's show. You can also find that on Twitter, at PWTorch. Around the end of the show, I tweet out the direct link to the live stream. So lots of ways to live stream our show after the fact. And if you want to participate, you can, but you can also just listen in that way. Okay, so with all that business out of the way, let's continue our conversation because we had a cage match main event. We had a Brock Lesnar, Bobby Lashley angle. I know something happened at the top of the show that I can't even remember because it was so long ago. What was the opening segment? Edge, yeah. Edge's jokes are really lame. It wasn't all bad, though, because there was Dominic doing his thing. So we'll get into that. Edge wasn't all bad, but man, he makes dad jokes seem hip and cool. So let's get on with it. All right, we will start with William from San Diego. as our first caller here. William, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the one true headline from tonight's show, and that is JBL and Baron Corbin breaking up, of course.
yes.
Okay, it seemed like Baron Corbin, there was like a hint of that, you know, broke, down on his luck kind of character at the end there. And maybe, I don't know if maybe I'm just reading too much into it, but that's kind of the hint that I got from watching it. And I think the other thing that kind of put it in my mind is I think I saw this headline recently where he was talking about how, you know, he thought that there was a good babyface run in that character and, you know, that maybe they pulled the trigger out of that a little too soon. So I don't know, do you guys get that same kind of feeling watching that segment? And do you agree that maybe there is some, I guess, juice to be squeezed still from that character?
First of all, I love that our first call is about that, of all the things that happen on the show, is, you know, the punchline at the beginning. But it is intriguing. I mean, I'm genuinely intrigued by it. And in part because I'm just celebrating what appears to be the end of, I mean, it should be the end of Baron Corbin and JBL. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a manager-wrestler pairing with less genuine chemistry than those two had. I mean, I'm so glad that they're split up. And I think you're right, William, to bring up the possibility that WWE just thought there might be something in Baron Corbin as a babyface that we didn't fully explore. And now let's do it. The problem is JBL was right. You know, if JBL is the heel, he's totally right. JBL wasn't costing Baron Corbin matches. Corbin is just losing. So it's not a real, you know, there's not a lot of momentum for this. So I'm curious, you know, what the plan is and where they're going. Darren, what do you think?
From what I saw, it certainly appears that he's making a face turn, and there might be a little bit there. And it appears also that JBL is going to be off my TV screen. Oh, I mean, I'm hoping JBL will be off my TV screen, so
yes.
Hopefully it will lead to a parting of the ways there. I just wonder if they course-corrected and saw that it wasn't working, or if this was how it was supposed to always play out, to have Corbin as a face who JBL turned on. I get the feeling it just didn't work out, and they were like, you know, no sense continuing this.
That's the feeling I have. This seemed like something that they thought would be a good match. Someone's down and out, and then JBL shows up with money and the limousines and the advice of being a wrestling god, which is sort of like Honky Tonk Man being the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. It started as a joke because his reign was full of intentional countouts and DQs and bad matches, and he lost so decisively. But he bragged about the length of the title reign in an absurd way in real time, that then later you'd get serious questions going, well, is Honky Tonk really the greatest IC champ of all time? Who's number two then? It's like, no, that was a joke. He said it to be absurd. So JBL is a wrestling god. It's like, that was a joke. He was good. He was better than people expected in his title run. But he was not a wrestling god. He's not a top-tier overall performer. But he was really good. But not top tier, not a wrestling god. And so the whole idea that he was there to save Corbin, it needed some chemistry for it to work out, because I don't think people were just instantly going, oh, my God, now that JBL's advising Corbin, sky's the limit, WrestleMania headliner in the making. So, yeah, I mean, I'm curious. Like I said, I'm mostly glad the JBL-Corbin thing appears to be over. But I have been I won't say yelled at by people in WWE whose opinions I respect, but something just short of that, because I've been more of a fan of Corbin's potential and work on the mic and in the ring than most. I've been more of a defender of his than most. And I think there is something more there to get out of him. And so maybe this is another attempt that will succeed. And maybe this attempt will succeed at getting him a level higher. Again, I don't think he's pay-per-view main eventer, but there's something there that they can do more with than they have been. So, yeah, we'll see. Anyway, William, anything else?
Yeah, I want to talk about the Fatal 4-Way with the women. I thought it was a really good showcase for Piper Niven, and I thought even Candice LeRae got some good spots in there. I thought it was a fun match overall. How do you feel about Carmella winning? Do you think they have more in store for Piper? And, for Candace, what did you think about her in that match too?
I thought that Carmella winning made sense. She's been gone for a long time, and she's the most established of the characters. And it's believable that she would win the chamber based on her history. Not that she'd be a favorite, but it's believable she would win. I'm not sure they could convince people the other three would be likely, although, you know, maybe Piper Niven with a couple extra weeks they could have. And I think Piper Niven looks strong. You know, this wasn't a match that she lost per se. It's just a match that Carmella won. So I'm fine with it. Darren, how about you?
I would have preferred Piper to take it, but I certainly understand that's their how they handle it. When somebody comes back, they usually get the win. So I certainly understand it. Also, you don't want to see Piper taking a pinfall loss because she probably wasn't going to win the chamber, and so she would have had to get beaten at some point. So it's fine that she wasn't in it. And it'll work out. Carmella's a good personality, and it's somebody that can take a pinfall when Asuka eventually wins. At least that's where I think it's going.
And that's the thing. You put Piper Niven in a match that she's going to lose that's higher profile, even if, yeah. So in this case, you're kind of saving her from being in a big match that she comes up short in by just having Carmella pin somebody else in the meantime. So I'm okay with it. And I actually was overall encouraged with Piper Niven's performance in the match, even if she didn't win, and her segment backstage afterwards just being, you know, kind of a badass bully. And getting to show that side of her, that, you know, her personality, that she can pull that off. So overall, I thought it was a good night for her. I don't think Piper Niven fans should be wrapped up in, I think it'd be tunnel vision and short sighted to be worried based on tonight about her. If you're a fan of hers and want to see her get a push, William, what else?
Yeah, moving on to the main event. What you guys think of it? And also, I guess I'll wait till later from your on-site correspondent. But what sense do you guys get from the, you know, the crowd reaction there? It just seems like I know that, you know, the main event of a three-hour spot is kind of rough, but the crowd seemed into it, but not. It still does feel kind of like a waste of Becky. It does feel like it's not doing a lot of too good, much good for either of Bayley or Becky, or, you know, damage control. And, yeah, I don't know. It just, my biggest fear is that they'll keep going all the way to WrestleMania with this, and it'll feel like kind of a waste of, you know, Becky's not really, or Bayley aren't, you know, necessarily chicken springs or anything, spring chickens or whatever the thing is. We only have so many years left of them in their prime, and I wish they would be, I don't know, doing something more important at this moment.
Darren, I'll throw to you. What do you think?
The cage match was exactly what I expected. And, I mean, you could take that as a positive or negative. It was good action and everything, but nothing that was unexpected. I was pretty much just waiting until Becky did the promo earlier saying that she had somebody that was coming or whatever alluded to that. So you're pretty much just waiting for that to happen, and you knew that Bayley's partners were going to interfere. And I was just basically waiting for that. And I thought it was a good surprise at the end, but all the drama was kind of out of it because you knew exactly what was going to happen. And that's fine. My bigger question involving that is, what do they have planned for Becky for a WrestleMania? She's one of their big-time players.
Does Lita turn heel on her?
Hmm. Oh, that could be.
I mean, I watched pro wrestling long enough that when I see two people smile and hug and love each other's company as much as those two did, it is doomed to lead to a turn in a match. So that crossed my mind in terms of kind of the, you know, what would be special enough for Becky if she's not in a world title match at WrestleMania. And it's not going to be someone else on the roster. Well, it could be. I mean, it could be Piper Niven, and I trust they could turn it into something. But Lita with, you know, one last match. I mean, that would be, you know, you want WrestleMania to feel different. It doesn't have to be the best feud for Becky, but you want it to feel different. And Lita's a big enough star. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, that just crossed my mind. I'd have to, you know, think more about all the options before I'd endorse it, but it's there as a possibility.
Yeah, that would definitely be big enough. I'm presuming they're going to team up at Elimination Chamber or something, perhaps. Is Bayley in the Elimination Chamber? is she free to have that match?
I think she's free to have the match.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if not,
yeah, she was in that parade of.
What's that, Quinn?
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that Bayley is definitely not in the match because she wasn't in the parade of people that surrounded the ring during that Asuka match. So she's
that's
not
a,
in the actual
a good way to remember.
Elimination Chamber match. Yeah.
Yeah, because right now they've Carmella qualified, Natalya qualified, and then you had the final four from the Rumble and Raquel, Nikki, Asuka, and Liv Morgan. So that is all six spots. So there's not a spot for Bayley unless there's, you know, an injury angle or something like that. So she's, and not everybody's going to be on the Elimination Chamber who's, you know, going to be on WrestleMania, obviously.
True.
All right, cool. William, any closing words?
You know, I think you already discussed pretty much all the thoughts I had about that Cody promo. I thought basically the exact same thing. It was really good promo. I was kind of suspicious about the timing of it. It does seem like maybe they're trying to take away some, I don't know, lower expectations from a lot of the hardcore fans than maybe, you know, we know deep down inside that Sami isn't going to win, but this one seemed like really like trying to shine a light on it. Like really don't expect more out of the Sami or a lot more of the Sami storyline heading into WrestleMania, because this is the direction that we're going. And I guess my question there is, if you guys would have done the same thing, because I'm kind of thinking that it obviously felt calculated in a way that maybe they felt like they couldn't take a risk in waiting after the Elimination Chamber. You know, if the Sami storyline just grew to a point where people were just no longer going to accept anything else other than Sami and Roman at WrestleMania, and they just, like I mentioned, they just wanted to lay this down at the start, this hot promo, and let people know that this is the direction.
Darren, do you want to add anything to that? Because those are, you know, concerns I expressed.
Right. I would have held it off, but obviously they think they have enough material to stretch it out, and maybe if they wanted to, as you say, lower the expectations. The other thing is, SmackDown kind of operates in its own world, so when they move to Friday, they don't even have to acknowledge this whole Cody thing. And they can just go back to the Sami Roman feud, and they can focus on each other and not really even have to allude to the Cody thing. So.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you're Sami is still going to be red hot, and, you know, that segment, I think the two can operate on independent paths. And I think if there was, as William points out, more of a thought that maybe Sami would end Reigns' reign and this just dashed all hope, then, no pun intended, although that was a dashing slip up on my part, it didn't, because I don't think people were holding out hope for that. You know, like, if there was a chance, like, they could have done a controversial finish at the Rumble. Like, did Cody's feet touch? Or did two people land out at the same time? Or something where, like, the winner was in dispute, and we're going to Secaucus, New Jersey for the replay crew to examine it. It might be like, well, maybe the Rumble winner won't headline WrestleMania this year. Maybe it'll be Sami defending against Roman in a rematch. It's just this, like, the Rumble on the calendar being the determinant of who faces the world champion, and only having one world champion on the men's side now does, you know, it creates challenges in terms of having a title match in between. And that, I think that's the only way that they could have added doubt about Sami coming up short, is if there was some doubt that Cody had won the Rumble so much that, or maybe they could have done an injury, like a re-injury angle with him, or like, oh, we don't know if he's going to be ready for WrestleMania, and milk that for 3 weeks before him triumphantly saying, I've been cleared. But then going into the chamber, there'd be like, ooh, maybe Cody's hurt. Maybe that means Sami is going to win. They're going to have to call an audible, and Cody will cash in that Rumble win at SummerSlam or something. So there's things they could have done. I know that they're concerned about it, but I don't think they're worried about it. And maybe that's sounds like the same thing, but like, they're cognizant of the need to address it in carefully, but I don't think that they're worried that it's going to screw up either the Chamber or WrestleMania. And I think there was certainly much more good than than negative in terms of affecting both Sammy and Cody collectively because of what they did tonight. William, thanks so much. I appreciate your call as always. Thanks for kicking things off.
Yeah, thank you guys for taking the call. Have a good one.
Yep, sure thing. All right, up next we'll go to Scott in Long Island. Scott, good to hear from you again. What's in your mind about Raw tonight?
On Long Island, no, just kidding.
Please do. I'd rather get it right, even if I get it, you got to berate me.
You have some good vocabulary. You're someone that would actually like appreciate that, and not just wave it off. So, yeah, no.
Oh no, I'm pretending to. I'm Scott. I'm pretending to be cool with it, but you're on the list.
I think that's one of Jericho's 8,000 gimmicks, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
But it's interesting because generally I'm not a huge fan, but my buddy that works in creative told me something last week. His quote was, "He loves more passionate than anyone I've met." Exact quote. And I'm like, anyone you've ever met, like out of like the performers, he's like, no, like out of like fans, podcast, anyone, he loves this. So there's something really like endearing about that, like, about him. But also, I just think it's like, 6 months of that guy in this kind of gimmick or whatever this is just a countdown to him being booed out of the building. So I hope eventually he's down for a massive heel turn because he's over the top corny for me. So I don't know. What do you think about the long term? I think that injury was maybe the best thing that could have happened to him timing wise. Because if that never happened and he was just babyface up until now, I'm not so sure this would be going down. I think WrestleMania we'll get there fine, but by SummerSlam, I think it's going to be like, all right, dude, like enough, like let's try something different. So, what do you think?
I think it's obviously a possibility. What you described about Cody is how a lot of people feel. People who like him right now might not realize that his act might wear thin after 2 months or 4 months. That said, Cody's going to have a lot more direction and a lot more people, I think, on his side who have been through a lot more. And in AEW, it's sort of everyone fending for themselves, for better or for worse. You kind of get your little circle and you come up with your material and you're given time and you go do it. And, Tony Khan knows what's going to be said, roughly, but it's not as intricate of a planning process as WWE has. And that can be good and it can also be bad depending on somebody perhaps overindulging in things that they'd be prudent to pull back on a little bit. Cody's going to be Cody. I just don't think there's a lot that they can do it would be wrong to have him like not be those adjectives you just laid out when it comes to him. That's who he is, but I think it can be framed and managed and finessed in a way that doesn't lead to the fans turning against him. But it is a challenge, and they're going to have to be they're going to have to tend to that. Because I do think the natural direction of Cody's character, despite the feel-good story and I'm home again and MSG this and WWE that, and it's all genuine, and I think WWE fans are more apt to not tolerate, that sounds bad, embrace and relate to that than AEW fans were. I think it wore a little thinner on the AEW demographic than it will on the current WWE fan base. But obviously those fans are still there. They booed him Friday. There was, I thought, and we'll find out from Sean next, because he's on hold, our on-site correspondent, if there was a little bit of booing of Cody. Obviously there was the Sammy chant while Cody's trying to talk, which isn't exactly being booed, but it's not exactly a big endorsement either. So it's something that they're going to be aware of. I that's a long way, Scott, of saying I don't think it's inevitable. I won't even say it's likely, but it is a distinct possibility. Absolutely. And it would be naive and dangerous for WWE and Cody to not realize that. And if it happens, it'll be great. Cody will be a great heel. But I don't think his heart will be in it. I think he wants to be a babyface. When I say his heart won't be in it, I shouldn't say it. He'll see it as a consolation prize that he's having to grit his teeth and embrace. But he'd be good at it. But I really do think Cody wants to be loved. He just has to not show how badly he wants to be loved, or fans will sense that and turn on him, especially because he's kind of quirky. What do you think, Derek?
Obviously they're aware of that, and they do have to be careful, kind of what I alluded to earlier with the what do you guys want to talk about. And like at the press conference after the Royal Rumble, where he sat and he had the Mountain Dew in front of him, and he's like, oh, let me try it. And of course he thought it was great. Like, of course you do. It's just like, come on, man. I mean, a lot of that stuff is, you know, and he's trying to be cute about it and everything, but a little of that is going to go, you know, a long way in getting on people's nerves. So you got to be careful of that kind of stuff. But down the line, if they do have to turn him and he starts getting booed and it's inevitable, just from that little bit of chemistry I saw tonight, if you were to pair him with Paul Heyman, you would have something special on your hands as a great heel act.
Oh, I know. That did, it did cross my mind. I was like, oh, these two have something special. I could see that. Like if Roman, you know, moves on to other things.
Sure.
Or just turns babyface, you know, which I hope he has a good run as a babyface before he moves on to Hollywood or you know, whatever is next for him. And Paul's looking for that next person to latch on to. Man, was there some magic in the ring tonight between those two.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, you can just see Heyman going, you know, I just made that thing up about Roman, right? You know, circa 2025, you know, we get a promo. And Cody's like, oh, Paul, I didn't know you made it up. Until, you know, whatever, you know, whatever. They can. All right, Scott, back to you. Any follow-up or anything else?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like, because now that, like, you know, in this era of, like, pro wrestling, kayfabe's kind of dead, it's intertwined. It's just, like, people, most, I think, not the casuals, but, like, fans know generally, like, who these people are because of social media and everything. So it's, like, I'd rather someone really love it and not have that, Wade, you'll remember the line verbatim because that's how you are, but, you know, do what I'm told and hope to get rich attitude. And be like Cody, who's probably thinking about this 20 hours a day and, like, really, like, just loving what he's doing. So, like, you know, you always, when you're watching a performer that genuinely loves what they're doing in any, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter, wrestling or not, like, you're going to, you know, find a bond with that. So, like, there's a part, but it's the suits and the extra pyro and the, and extra, and he just lays everything on so thick. And I'm sure the people at Pepsi wouldn't have mattered, you know, cared that much if he's like, this stuff is gross and I shouldn't have drank, you know, but like, you know, I just, and then, you know, I'll say one more thing. I mean, did you guys catch the news, like, season of Chrisley Knows Best? That guy's going to jail.
Oh,
like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
New season. Screw Monday Night Raw. I got a DVR of that. That's if we get consciously in jail, I want. Let's start a podcast immediately.
I was not stunned, but I was like, wow, there's a season in the can, and we're getting more of this guy, even though he's been disgraced. That was interesting. I mean, I'm not sure it's enough to get me to watch the show, but it did catch my eye. Darren, are you a fan of Chrisley Knows Best?
Just from seeing, like, the 2-minute overrun always, and I think they're both going to jail, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Or prison.
Yeah.
They
have to bring in IRS to kind of cut a promo on his tax evasion. That just works too well.
Yeah,
but and then the last thing I'll leave you with is I'm becoming more and more. I was always a bigger fan of Rollins and Theory. I think most people are a fan of Rollins, but his character than his, like, bland. Like, he doesn't really turn face or heel for any reason. He just kind of goes with. But Theory has really got. He's got something. Sometimes he gets a little stiff when he's talking, or you can maybe kind of think he's, like, thinking, or maybe he doesn't recover right away. But I truly think he's got something really special. What is he, like, 25 or something? Like, man, if they really are behind him and they're clearly he's getting time now, I think that guy's got something special. 5 years from now, he might be a big star.
I agree. And I've asked people I respect in that company about him because I like to do that when somebody seems to be getting a push and just, you know, find out, is this someone like I should be – I should say that I should be rooting for to succeed, but are people rooting for them to succeed, I guess is the way. And do they have those – are there things working against them politically or for them politically? And what I hear about him is he's a student of the game. He wants to be great, and he's got a great attitude. Not everybody who at age 25 is the same person they were when they were 21 or 22. Doesn't mean you don't – you know, that they're – you know, that doesn't carry with you, but the fact is a fact. He is seen as somebody who asks the right questions and is showing up and being professional and is hungry to succeed and wants to know what to do and what not to do to succeed. And you combine that with that natural look, and by the way, he's shown what a good in-ring worker he is. And on the microphone, in all kinds of settings, he's really good. He can act. He can act without overacting, which is, you know, a weird but important trait to have in pro wrestling, because when all you can do is overact, it really does limit you to the mid card, or, you know, being kind of a gimmicky performer. You got to have more range, and he has that. So, yeah, I think in 3, 4, 5 years, I mean, that's the track he's on. It's a matter of him just not screwing it up, and it'll be a shame if he does, because I think there's a lot of talent there. And I thought tonight he was good. I mean, just the comic timing he had with Gargano, you know, showed a lot in NXT. But, like, you know, just asking earnestly, could Bronson Reed even fit in a pod? Like, he says it like it's not an insult, but just a genuine, innocent question that came to mind. He does that stuff well. So, yeah, I'm with you, Scott. What do you think, Darren?
I'm slowly starting to turn a corner on him. I was not, you know, a fan of his whatsoever, but he's growing on me. He's starting to show a little bit, and I will be completely honest that I tuned out his commentary this evening because I was still kind of processing the whole Cody Paul thing. I was not really paying attention, and I don't know. I thought the little parts I did remember were kind of cliches or whatever, but in honesty, I wasn't listening, so that's not even fair to say. But he's growing on me. But
yeah,
he was a victim of the letdown of after the big segment of the night.
Sure, absolutely. Scott, anything else for us?
Yeah, last thing. You know, like in adding to that, in any sport, they talk about that it factor. Whatever it is, that guy has it. So, you know, the rest of it, who knows, the pushes and injuries or whatever. But that it factor, I mean, doing the NXT stuff and showing, oh, you know what, like I'm okay doing comedy. I can do in-ring stuff. I can do this. I can be a heel. I can be a more serious heel. He has that. And, no, I'll let you get to Sean, and I'll listen. And as I say, every time I'll go in until both of our hearts are broken, Wade, a wild Islander Stanley Cup Finals. Here's to that, and have a good night, guys.
Thanks, Scott. We can talk hockey another day.
Thanks, Scott.
Yep. All right, let's move to Sean, our on-site correspondent, just attended Raw in Orlando. Sean, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding a few minutes there.
No problem, Wade. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. First things first, let's talk about that Cody segment. What was it like to be in the building for that? Did it come across as a stellar, memorable segment in the building? Take us through the emotions in the building during that, from ring entrances through maybe even what happened off air after the segment ended.
I will say ahead of time, I'm not sure what you all already discussed regarding the segments, as I just kind of joined the podcast halfway. I do apologize for that.
As far as how it felt
in the building, it felt great. I couldn't tell from my seats. It looked like Heyman got a little emotional. I'm not sure if that was true emotion or Paul Heyman being one of the best in the world at what he does. But it went over well with the fans. The one thing that kind of got me towards the back end is when he's saying he will face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, kind of erasing the Sami Zayn aspect of it, even though he did mention it earlier.
Yep.
That stood out to me more than anything. It kind of feels like it's a foregone conclusion for Sami. which is pretty sad because that's one of the, in my opinion, the best storylines in some time in WWE that is kind of going to be brushed under the rug for Cody. And I like Cody. I just feel like the storytelling was leading to the Sammy at Mania, but it doesn't seem like we're going to be getting that, which I think is going to hinder Cody. There was nobody booing Cody, but there's still that indecisiveness of Sammy or Cody because they're both faces at this point, and people really don't know who to go for.
So there was no booing of Cody, like during ring entrance, after his music stopped, right before the Sammy chant, just no booing of Cody?
None that I realized. From my seats, I really didn't hear any booing. I'm not sure how it came across on TV. I know that can be a little different, but from everything I heard, there was really no booing of Cody. Everyone was happy, and as soon as his music hit, everyone got on their feet and was excited to see him and hear what he had to say.
Were there Sammy chants any time else in the evening, like randomly, like if a video package aired or before Raw went on the air? Like, because I remember being in the lobby in Minneapolis at Target Center, and there was just a CM Punk chant, you know, like a dozen years ago. Wherever you went, CM Punk. Yeah. So was that the case with Sam, or was it more just the Cody segment?
During one of the commercial breaks, we could tell it's a commercial break, they played a package for pretty much that storyline and what's coming up, and everyone was doing the Sammy, but it wasn't as predominant as I thought it would be throughout the night. I'm a big Sammy guy. I wore a Sami Zayn shirt, but I think going into it, fans knew that he's more so on SmackDown, and we weren't really going to see him. I think that played a role into that.
Yeah. It's funny, your critique at the end of, like, I got wrapped up in it, but in the end, it would look like Cody was even looking past Sammy, could work against things. It's the one negative about an otherwise stellar segment. That was my observation, too, although I don't know if it's worth addressing because they have, a couple weeks to make you forget about that. But it certainly was an interesting choice, timing-wise.
How would you feel if they would have done this segment after the Elimination Chamber with Paul Heyman? I don't see the need for it now. Why not wait 2 weeks? Then you would kind of eliminate that. You can have Cody do something else in the meantime.
I agree. They set it up last week with Judgment Day. They certainly could have, and they chose not to. And I don't know if it was because they felt like 2 weeks is too long to wait. And Cody will seem like a consolation prize after Sammy comes up short, and they'll resent Cody. So let's not let this fester any longer. Let's 72 hours after he's booed on SmackDown, let's have Heyman work his magic. Let's have Cody do his thing. We've got this idea for a promo. Let's make sure people know Cody is WrestleMania main event worthy in terms of standing in the ring with Heyman and making you think Cody's a big enough star to headline WrestleMania. We love Sammy more, but Cody's a star. And I won't resent Cody being the WrestleMania main event because he looked like he can be that guy, you know? So I think largely this came across as it can be on a parallel track with Sammy, and just, there's a Sammy thing, there's a Cody thing. You can enjoy them both. You can root for them both. I would say, and I said this earlier, Sean, if I thought people thought Sammy had a chance to beat Roman, I would have said this was a mistake. I think they calculated people don't think Sammy's winning anyway, so there's less harm to be done. They just want to be – they want to watch what happens in Montreal when Sammy and Roman fight. And they know it's going to be a spectacle, and there's going to be tons of crowd heat. The fans who think Sammy could win are not going to think this promo is sending a meta message that he's not winning. They're not. If they didn't already know Sammy wasn't winning, this segment won't change their mind. I think that's their calculation.
I would probably agree with you on that. It kind of stinks for Sammy. I mean, I felt like he kind of built that storyline, and he's kind of getting relegated for all his hard work. Yeah, I just feel like he's being relegated for really no fault of his own other than Cody was just in the right place, right time. The recovery time lined up with the Rumble, and it just worked out for him.
Well, Sean, the people who were in charge of that segment tonight with Heyman and Cody, including Heyman and Cody, are also in charge, for the most part, of making sure Sammy seems relevant for the next couple of weeks. I think Sammy's still in good hands, but it's a good problem to have. To have two red hot baby opponents
agree.
For your world champion.
Yes, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Darren, do you want to add?
I noticed. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Sean, go ahead. No. I'll throw it to Aaron next.
Austin,
go ahead with another
Austin
copy
Theory,
note.
Austin Theory, even though he is the conventional heel, the pop he gets when his music hits was, I mean, yeah, Brock and Edge, obviously they're going to get the bigger pops, but I was very surprised. I didn't expect that from Austin Theory myself.
Yeah.
But the pop is, people are starting to definitely notice him as a talent for sure.
Interesting. How did Cody's pop as a babyface compare to any other babyface on the show, including, you know, Becky Lynch and Edge? Edge had the advantage of kind of, you know, being out first on Raw. But yeah, where do they rank?
I mean, as far as Cody's pop was up there. I mean, there's not many besides Brock. I mean, people go crazy when they see Brock,
oh, yeah,
when they know Brock's coming. But I think Brock's probably,
yep,
the highest pop, him and Edge. And then right after that, this Cody. I mean, he's right there. It's just, I think Brock's a spectacle in himself. He doesn't show up every week, which helps that. So when you do get him,
mm-hmm,
it does feel more deserving. And I kind of feel slighted that after all these years, I mean, Brock's pretty good on the mic, in my opinion. I think that came across well. He has the crowd eating from the palm of his hands pretty much the whole time he's talking. And I didn't, I mean, years ago, I mean, I go to several events throughout my time as a wrestling fan, and I didn't think Brock had it in him as far as the mic skills, and I am, over the past few years, been definitely wrong.
I have said during the whole run of Paul Heyman doing all the talking that people are forgetting how good Lesnar got on the microphone in his first few years in the business. And he's getting a chance to show it, but it's fun because people who know Brock know this as Brock, you know, the country boy, the farm boy. I think he's laying on the gosh golly gee stuff a little too much, almost like cartoonishly so, and I would dial it back a little, but this is kind of who he actually is, you know? You know, it's cartoonized a bit for wrestling character. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, he's definitely,
but,
more,
you know,
relatable,
I mean,
this way than before.
But his line, like, when I crawl into bed with my wife, you're thinking, oh, all I'm thinking about is Bobby Lashley. And he's like, well, 3 or 4 hours later, I start thinking of Bobby again. And I was like, oh, man, that was good. That I didn't see that coming. So,
yes, I agree. That definitely got the whole crowd going.
I say this all the time. People in this era like to watch people who are showing a joy of performance, a joy in their performance. And Lesnar doesn't look like he's showing up for a paycheck to clock in and out, standing behind Paul,
agreed,
crossing his arms. He's out there, and whether it's true or not, he maybe is just thinking about how much money he's making for talking for 4 minutes, and that's all he cares about. Doesn't matter. He looks like he's having fun. And that goes so far in this business, when you look like you are loving that you clocked into work. Because everybody watching, you know, not everybody watching loves their job. And a lot of people watching would like to have the job the wrestlers have. They don't want to hear them seem like they're complaining about travel or cross-country flights or this or that, you know, or fame. I just want anonymity. Well, then quit, you know, shut up and quit. You know, you're making a lot of money and you're a big star. Don't ever act like this isn't a dream job. Whether it is or not, you know, your job is to not make it seem that way. And Brock at this point, you know, it's good. It was interesting, too, and I want to ask you about this. He got cheered. Did Lashley get booed the whole time? Did people like pop her at the beginning and then boo at the end? Because his whole thing about dressing the expensive suit and what was the other thing he said that was, oh, I'll have my lawyer, my manager, and my agent look at the contract.
Yes.
That seemed to finally hearing people to booing him. Talk about the evolution of the reaction to Lashley in that segment.
So at first, I mean, the reaction was definitely torn throughout the whole segment, but at the beginning, it was definitely cheers. And then when he starts talking about his manager, I'm thinking, when he starts talking about his manager and lawyer, I'm thinking that he's going to team back up with MVP and the Hurts business. And I thought that was going to end up happening. Sort of sounds like they were going towards that. That's what I thought, at least. I can't say for everyone. But towards the end, he just came out more of the regular heel, was what you think he would be.
Yeah.
Which I didn't think,
yep,
he was going. I thought last year was going to face, but with everyone loving Brock so much, you really can't do that.
Right. Yep. Darren, do you have a question for Sean?
Yeah, a couple things. During Cody's promo, he kind of referenced AEW in a roundabout way. Was there any kind of buzz or reaction at all from the fans when he did that?
There was a few fans behind me that I noticed that did say AEW, but not very many. I do know during breaks and stuff, people were talking about AEW, but nothing nothing that came across like chance or anything like that. I was worried that that may happen. Not really worried. I mean, we all know the business exists. I know it's kind of the unspoken thing, but I think it's kind of okay that they mentioned it in that way. We're not going to ignore and act like nothing's there, especially with Cody. I think the fans handled it well, I'll say. But that, again, this is Orlando. This isn't like is this what happened in Chicago? Maybe they don't get that same reaction. Maybe they get more AEW chance.
Uh-huh. My other question was, over Royal Rumble weekend, they had mentioned, I had heard reports that they had sold out of Cody merchandise and they had to restock at the Fan Fest or whatever. Did you notice any fans wearing, like, new Cody merchandise or even old, for that matter, Cody merchandise in the arena, for instance?
So that was something I was going to bring up to Wade. So I did notice a lot of Cody merch, but it's not as easy to tell anymore from your seats as it used to be. You don't have the John Cena green shirt or the Bootio's blue shirt as easy as it used to be. A lot of these shirts now are black and gray, and they're really hard to tell from the back and sides and from distance who they are. I did see several Cody shirts from my area, but I don't know if that went throughout the whole arena or not. I will say they're making their T-shirts more friendly for the day-to-day person to wear out in the open to their Home Depot and stuff like that, which I think is kind of good. It doesn't seem too off-putting.
Cool. Thanks.
What was the in-ring highlight for you and in terms of fan reaction, and was there any point in the show that the in-ring action lost the crowd where people were getting up or just, you know, looking at their phones or not really all that interested?
So the one, I'm not sure how it came across on TV, that definitely lost the crowd in the arena was the Montez versus Elias match. That was the only time that boring chance popped out. I'm not sure how that came across, that whole match came across on TV, because it's kind of hard to tell sometimes if they're at commercial or not. So I'm not sure if the boring chance captured on TV. But it was definitely a low moment for about, it felt like 4 minutes, so I felt like it couldn't be the whole commercial. But once it picked up, it kind of went away. As far as, the highlight in ring, I'm just a big Bayley fan, Bayley and Becky Lynch, so just watching that match, I liked it from my angle. Again, I'd like to know how you felt, Wade, it came across on TV. The only moment I didn't like from that match is fairly early. Again, this could have happened on commercial. There was a moment where Becky knocked Bayley off the turnbuckle, and Becky started to climb out of. And I was like, I don't understand why that would be a thing. I'm not sure if that part was captured on TV. Like, why would she try to escape if she's trying to get the cage match to lock her in? It doesn't seem like escaping would be the right route for the face.
Yeah, well, ultimately she won not escaping after, you know, shenanigans at ringside and such. I thought the cage match worked. Yeah, I mean, we had a, you know, commercial break just a couple minutes in, but then there was, you know, quite a bit of action afterwards, and the last few minutes were the shenanigans. But I thought that, you know, going 14, 15 minutes, it was sufficient payoff to the buildup of the cage hanging above the ring and sufficient for the backstory of the feud and the buildup. And, you know, I mean, the crowd seemed into it. They were chanting Becky when she made her comeback.
Yep.
And there was, you know, drama on the top rope. I, you know, getting into the logic of strategies of how people go about winning cage matches can kind of take you out of the match because it, you know, I mean, they're trying to tell the story. The heel wants to win by going out the door, but Becky doing it well in a leg lock is sort of showing up the heel because you're like, well, you know, you got me in a leg lock, but my way to escape is going to be to win by going out the door, and it in a way, it's a resourceful way to try to break up a submission hold. So I don't think that comes across as like a cheap way to win as much as just, you know, resourceful.
No, yeah, I agree on that. I think this moment may have not have been on TV then because it was like maybe 2 or 3 minutes in, it felt like, and she knocked Bayley off the apron and started climbing out with no – and then Bayley just obviously came. Oh. I think they were just trying to buy time. So
gotcha.
In my mind, I was like, why is she escaping 3 minutes in? When she wants to pretty much get her hands on Bayley, it's the point of the cage match. I know they want to win ultimately, but it seems like it's a vengeance thing.
Totally, and that's one of the issues with WWE cage match rules. It's always there. If the babyface wants to just get their hands on the heel without anyone interfering, you got to do two things. You don't want to make it seem like the babyface is trying to win by escaping early before dishing out punishment. And two, you don't want to break the mirage that the cage actually keeps people out. And WWE, you know, often breaks both of those rules.
Yes,
Darren, what do you think?
Those cages don't keep anybody out.
No. Darren, by the way, what do you think of the cage match? Springboarding off of the conversation here with Sean.
Well, I thought it was fine. It was serviceable. I kind of alluded to it earlier. This is about what I expected, but
yeah.
I think the ending of it saved it.
Yeah.
But it was fine. Nothing bad to say about it. It was just kind of predictable.
Yep.
Yes, I
was. Was there anything that you saw before Raw match-wise or mic work, and then was there a dark match or anything else? I suspect there wasn't, just because the cage match is a sufficient way to end the show.
As soon as it got out, because I have a young son I brought with me this time, I kind of got out of it. I'm not sure. I know Becky and Lee are kind of going around the barrier and just taking pictures and everything with people. As far as before the show started, you did have the Creed brothers versus Gallows and Anderson.
Okay.
Which it was nice to see the Creed brothers.
Yeah. Who won?
Gallows and Anderson.
Okay. I could have seen them going either way on that. Being near NXT territory.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's the Creed. Yeah, I was wondering if the Creed brothers have been doing main event stuff like that, or if it's just because NXT is right in our backyard that we have that luxury.
Yeah. Did Bianca Belair get a real nice reaction coming out after the Chelsea Green Oscar match?
So I was taking my son to the restroom at that point, but I will say as soon as that music dropped, you hear the fans go crazy. I was walking up the steps, and you hear the fans go crazy for Bianca. That's without a doubt. Asuka got a huge pop as well. Everyone seems to love Asuka's new, not really even sure if you could call it a gimmick, but we're kind of reverting back to her New Japan days a little bit with the face paint.
Yeah, a new look. Anything else you want to share with us, Sean, about your experience tonight, including just how your young son reacted, or, you know, just the, kind of from the through the lens of a kid or kids?
He loved it. I mean, throughout the whole thing, it was a little loud for him. We did bring a little earmuffs for him because the pyro and everything does get him a little bit started. I mean, seven. So, I mean, he's just getting there. It just scared him off, caught him off guard a little bit. But he enjoyed it. He kind of picked up on which ones the crowd were going for and always kind of liking the baby faces over the heels. So he's starting to gather it. He really loved, and one of my favorites was Chad Gable. I feel like he's super underutilized.
Mm-hmm.
Getting the shush thing over, I think, tremendously. I'm not sure if that came across on TV, but I definitely know after he came out, there was a commercial break, and people love him. I hope they do more with him in the future. But as far as my overall happiness with the show, it was pretty good. I think we were kind of spoiled. We got Brock, we got Edge, we got Lita. I mean, we were pretty spoiled,
yes.
I think, for the most part. I can't complain. I've been to several, well, you know me now, at least from just different shows and things like that. I've been to several shows. And as far as just for a Raw, I think it's probably my first Raw. I've been to several SmackDowns and Manias and just pay-per-views. As a Raw, I mean, I couldn't go. It didn't seem a long 3 hours. Like, sometimes watching on TV seems... the show
yeah.
the flow well, and we enjoyed it from beginning to end.
I think they're getting better at that, both from a live experience and even a TV experience. I think they've gotten better about making the 3 hours tolerable. I hesitate to say that because I'm still think it'd be better if they were two. You know, in a lot of different ways, they'd burn out their audience less and all that. But they're better at it than they used to be. And I mean, a theme not that many years ago with On-Site Correspondence was how much downtime there was in these shows. And we're not hearing that from our on-site correspondents at tapings anymore. It doesn't feel like you're just sort of a prop in the crowd for very little in-ring talking or action because there's, you know, so much else, so much downtime. And that's important.
Well, yeah,
you want to draw fans
good,
every time
say,
you go back to a city.
Yeah, I agree. They're pretty good when it goes to the commercial about keeping the fans interactive as well. They definitely start showing fans on Jumbotron. That's the part my son loved the most when they started just shooting the camera on different angles and trying to get people on the Jumbotron and having Stone Cold do interviews, not really interviews, but the questions with Bully Ray and then Mankind, just asking them funny questions and them answering one or two word answers.
Yes.
It was a good way to keep it center team in commercial breaks. There was no real lull time between the whole show. I think they did well when it comes in. I will say the 3 hours does seem to linger when you have little ones, just because, I mean, they go to school in the morning. A show starts at 8, ends at 11. It'd be a lot better if it ends at 10. Like tomorrow, my son's not even going to school. I'm being a good dad for him, I guess. I would love if my dad did that to me.
Yeah.
Number, so.
There you go. Yep. Yes. Yes. Cool. Sean, anything else you want to share with us at all?
No, sir. I appreciate you having me on again. Next time it comes to this area, just let me know, and you can go to them.
Cool. Awesome. Sean, thanks for taking time to talk with us.
No problem, sir. You have a good night.
Yep, you too. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. If you want to be an on-site correspondent, if you're going to a Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown in coming months, let me know, and we'll talk with you about being on the show. You can call us right now if you've joined us or you've been listening all along. Feel free, consider yourself invited to give us a call, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, as Justin in Charlotte did. Justin, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Appreciate it, fellas. One thing I wanted to point out to the show tonight, I'm glad the on-site correspondent mentioned how the show flowed. I feel like this show versus mostly all the shows we got during the fall, the show felt focused on storylines and progressions for feuds and things that they're building towards. A lot of the brawls during the fall, when people was kind of questioning Triple H's vision creatively, it just felt like they were just trying to fill 3 hours. I don't really feel like that the last couple of weeks, really since the calendar change. And after they got something so big to build for at WrestleMania, it just seemed like a more focused show. And those are the feelings that I had about Triple H when he first took over at creative. So kind of want to get you guys' thoughts on the focus aspect of the show versus what everybody loved he was doing back during the summer versus these last few weeks.
Yeah, in a way, if you break the year into quarters, he sort of had like a sophomore slump in like October, November, December after, you know, a good start August and September. You know, at some point, yeah, it started to feel like he's, oh, God, let's just put a long match on and let's get through this week. But it's Rumble season. It's Mania season. He's not – yeah, he's just got more big names and big angles to work with, and it's the time you want to rev up. And I do think that's happening, and that's good. You know, I wrote the cover story of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter a few weeks back saying this is, you know, Triple H's first WrestleMania season, and it's a big deal. It, you know, Vince McMahon tried to rise to the occasion every year, both in terms of the lineup and the making the card feel special with legacy stars, celebrities, big angles, culminations, and just making the TV, you know, get people excited about what's Planet Mania and for that matter, starting with the Rumble. And I think he got some good grades, you know, at this point. It's I wouldn't say it's early, but, you know, there's more time to go before we'll, you know, give them a full grade. But I think the trajectory is positive right now. The problem is, you know, it's March when things start to be like, oh, God, let's just get past WrestleMania. This is starting to feel redundant and played out. So I am curious to see if he's aware that that's a pretty typical feeling. People get excited about Mania, but they just can't wait for it to be over by the time it happens. Just booking wise. So you get fresh matchups and stuff. If you'll find a way to pace it. And that's where, you know, did they peak too early with Cody? You know, is it like, it's like when you're a stand-up comedian and the opening act has everyone too tired to laugh at your act. You know, is there more to do? And I just say, if they can produce what they did tonight, I'm going to have faith that they've got more ideas for how to fill the next month and a half. Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, they're doing a good job of keeping things moving. I didn't think it dragged too much in that third hour, of course. And obviously the 3 hours is too long, but that's just not going to change. But it didn't get dragged too much into the, I guess, the Ford versus who did he face? Elias match.
Yeah.
And maybe that was more due to Elias or whatever. But
very likely.
That kind of dragged, but it was inevitable.
Yeah.
And even as our live correspondent, Sean referenced, even sitting there didn't seem as long as it did on television. And that's a testament to Triple H keeping things moving and making things have importance and bringing back fresh characters, that kind of thing. So, and yeah, good for him.
Very good. Justin, anything else on your mind?
Yeah, second thing I wanted to mention, something you pointed out, Wade, that I was thinking while I was on hold, and the fact that, like you mentioned, two hot baby faces, the challenge for a championship that a guy's held for almost 3 years, and for the first time, whether you agree with Sammy winning or Cody winning, their sides to believability that he can lose the championship, which has to happen. And I was just sitting here, and I don't know if you guys could think of it right off the rip like that, but can you remember a hotter time for WWE when it comes to the babyface side, when it comes, we know the record revenue they did for Royal Rumble, we know the ratings are up, SmackDown did another good number on Friday. Can you remember a time where they felt hotter as far as having two babyface stars at the same time and just business-wise being successful in that regard? Besides, you know, they sign some big TV deal, their revenue goes up every year. As far as selling tickets, ratings, fan interest, that seems to be pretty high. Can you think of the last time they had all of those things at once?
I mean, it feels different in that, like, when Daniel Bryan was red hot, it was at the expense of Batista. You know, there's been the wrestler that everybody likes, and then the wrestler that Vince McMahon has chosen, and they often haven't been the same thing. This is a case where you just have two at once, and then you have this really strong world champion in Roman Reigns holding, you know, both titles and having a long reign. I mean, the pieces are in place for this to – I'm not saying the biggest WrestleMania. If the metric measurement method was the same, and it's not, you know, it'd be so interesting. We're still in the buy rate era. You know, how many buys does a pay per view get? You know, or the buy rate term comes from the percentage of homes with pay per view who choose to order it. If we were still in those days, but you know, we lost that apples to apples type of comparison. You know, and even ticket prices are at a completely different level than they used to be, and there's fewer house shows. There's all kinds of things that kind of change the dynamic, but in ratings, I mean, 2.3 million plus for SmackDown again on Friday. SmackDown numbers are up. You know, seasonally you expect that, but it's still good numbers. I mean, Darren, does anything come to mind in terms of a WrestleMania over the years where it has some of the similar traits that Justin pointed out that this season does?
Oh, the first thing that popped in my mind was Daniel Bryan and Cena, but Triple H was not exactly what you call a hot world champion. And I think he was the champion then, if I'm not mistaken. But before that, you'd have to go back to maybe Eddie Guerrero and the Man We Do Not Speak Of, perhaps?
Yeah.
Going back that far? I can't think of any parallel.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, their numbers are up a little over, you know, what they were a year ago, just, you know, SmackDown ratings. You know, this time a year ago, they were in the kind of 2.1, and, you know, lately they've been in the 2.3 plus range. I mean, it's not a huge difference, but it's, you know, one of the better apples to apples indicators we have that is documented by a third party, not just, you know, them bragging about Peacock internal numbers. So yeah, I mean, Justin, anything come to mind or that you want to add as far as your own question?
As far as back as I can think of is around 2005. Now, I'm not going to compare Cody Rhodes and Sami Zayn to a Batista and John Cena as far as legacy-wise, but that's kind of the last time I can think of two hot babyface at the same time, because even the CM Punk thing, I mean, we're talking about the main event of WrestleMania. You know, CM Punk was a hot baby face, but he always played second to John Cena as far as that went. But here, I mean, there's legitimately people who feel like Sami Zayn can main event WrestleMania right now. I felt far more validated with the cheering that I heard of Cody tonight, because I've really been against the idea, because it almost feels like people are kind of trying to create this negative thing about Cody getting the main event of WrestleMania that I don't really feel is there as much as people are trying to believe that it is. They've seen what happened in AEW, and it's almost like they're thinking it's inevitable to happen. I mean, it may, but I think they're behind it. I think they're doing a good job by keeping these two shows. That's another thing I think they're doing with Two Hot Baby Faces is that I feel like was mentioned earlier, where what's going on with Sammy and Roman versus what happened tonight feels far apart enough where they don't feel like they're bleeding in to each other's story too much to Sami Zayn. It's not like he's getting less over because of what's going on with Cody on Raw. I mean, brand extension, you know, we know it's not perfect, but it does feel like they both have their own top baby face, and it doesn't feel like it's bleeding in too much the way it can when people are jumping from show to show. Last thing I wanted to mention before I head out was I was very surprised about the reaction he said Bianca Belair got, and, I mean, the live experience versus the home experience is totally different, but, man, does she feel cold to me as a champion. Mm-hmm. And as someone who's headed to WrestleMania, as a champion who's had the belt over 300 days, I mean, you know, maybe they're going to do Asuka and Bianca from an in-ring standpoint. I feel like the match would be terrific. But from a storyline perspective, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that there is a hot singles match for her, which is why I keep coming up to the idea that they're probably going to do a multi-women's match at Mania, just because I don't know how hot Asuka and Bianca Belair feud could be. Maybe it could be good, but she just feel real cold right now. And seeing the reaction that Rhea Ripley got, and she wasn't in the middle of the show today, compared to how Bianca feels.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how you guys interpret it. Wade, I know you've been mentioning for a long time that the character feels stale, and now I'm starting to see people kind of lean towards that direction as far as it's just stale. So I just want to know what you guys thought about that. I mean, where she was a year ago and then the year prior versus now with so much hot stuff going on, and for her to have such a long reign and feel like one of the more colder people going into Mania.
Darren, I want to throw to you first on that, because I've talked a lot about Bianca. I thought this was a better presentation of Bianca, a step in the right direction. It was a little less 12-year-old girl skipping, swinging her ponytail with this pasted-on smile. That just doesn't feel like an authentic 30-something-year-old woman. It just doesn't feel authentic to me. It feels, you know, sort of almost unbecoming of a mature adult for her to be directed to act the way that she does and to lean into the mannerism so hard. This wasn't a full ring entrance, but it did seem like that was toned down a little bit, and it was a little bit more of the real her and not the one-dimensional kind of cartoonish character that they have her play. But I've thought that before, and then it's just regressed again. But yeah, I mean, it's been a disappointing year for, you know, for Bianca. This will not be looked at as this breakout 12-month period for her. And 12 months ago, we were thinking it would be. What do you think?
Oh yeah, the promo tonight I thought was better, because she came out and addressed them and gave all the women props and said, "I'm looking forward to facing you." Very straightforward. And she didn't rely on, you know, some of the hey girl stuff that they kind of do that doesn't seem natural coming from her. And so I think she talked more in a real voice today, which I always prefer her to do. The Alexa feud didn't do her any favors. I think they need to kind of hype up that how long it's been, because I guess it's been almost a year or whatever as champion. I think they could do that. Potentially, and I'm assuming, as I alluded to earlier, that she's facing Asuka, that doesn't necessarily seem WrestleMania level. So I was thinking, I had heard rumors last year that they were thinking of putting the Money in the Bank back in WrestleMania like it originally was, and that would open the opportunity to, as I call her, just talked about having a multiple woman match. If you did the Money in the Bank at WrestleMania, maybe they're headed that way, perhaps, because it just seems like a
Damian
one-on-one.
Priest flipped up when he said, "I'm going to be in the Money in the Bank this year." And
he did he? Favorite. I didn't notice that.
Yep.
Oh, maybe that's a clue.
Yeah, a little slip up. Yep.
Well, a little a clue. But yeah, so hopefully they go in that direction, because I just think a one-on-one, I'm just not feeling it this year.
Yeah. Cool. I appreciate the call, Justin. Anything else you want to say before we move on?
Just appreciate you guys taking my call. This is my 70th year listening to the show. So this is one of the hottest times I can remember as far as going into Mania and having so much to talk about with the Cody Rhodes segment and Roman Reigns' dominant run, Sami Zayn, this 7-8 month long story that's culminating right now. You got two, I feel Elimination Chamber with that Roman Reigns match alone makes that show a must see, and then you follow it up with WrestleMania. They're doing good with attendance and stuff. It's just, it's a good time. It's a good time for them. And it just, I enjoy the shows every week, obviously, but when you have so much going on from a story perspective and characters-wise, it makes the shows just that much more enjoyable. So I appreciate you guys.
Yeah. Great. Appreciate it, Justin. Thanks. Thanks for calling in. Look forward to talking to you next time. Yeah, I agree. This is a fun WrestleMania period, and, you know, with the hiccup with Vince McMahon forcing his way back onto the board, and we're like, uh-oh, and, you know, but at this point, the on-air product isn't affected negatively at this, and segments like that Heyman-Cody thing tonight, which is overshadowing some other good stuff on the show, you know, it's fun to talk about here on a podcast like this. I want to go to some emails here. And speaking of that segment, Ed from High Desert, California said, good evening, Keller and Lily, as he writes it. obviously, the Rhodes Heyman segment promo was great. The only negative I would say is that it was between Paul and Cody and not Cody and Roman. We got time for that. Heyman doesn't occupy the same space in the bloodline that he did with Brock. Heyman was fully out in front with Brock. Like with Bobby Heenan, when his guy would lose, he was fully invested, and dunking on Heenan made sense. I don't know that Heyman has that same feel. It felt like the Royal Rumble and Cody winning took place in a completely different universe than the one Roman is in. Do Cody and Roman make a connection in their promos that Cody and Paul have? There's probably a better way to frame what I'm saying instead of saying a negative. So, yeah, I'll start with that. He's got a couple more things here. We'll find out. You know, I mean, we'll find out. I mean, that's what I'm excited about is we don't know. You know, we just don't know if there's going to be a chemistry with Roman and Cody, and I'm looking forward to it. I want to see Roman interact with Cody. I want to see Cody interact with Roman. And if Heyman does the heavy lifting because there's just great chemistry with those two, I can live with that. But obviously there's going to be time for Roman, and maybe this segment builds up anticipation for when Roman finally is standing opposite of Cody, but we are 2-3 weeks away from that. What do you think, Darren?
Yeah, it's something I'm looking forward to. And I have no doubt that they'll come through because Roman, you know, he's on fire on any time he's asked to deliver anything on the mic recently. So that gives fans something to really look forward to. And we've got a few weeks of time to fill. And I'm sure we'll have maybe 2 or 3 of these confrontations. And I think they have some good stuff in store. So I'm looking forward to that.
He says, any chance Heyman turns on Roman at WrestleMania, joins up with Cody because of their history? Not sure if that would mean Cody is a heel. Yeah, I mean, I guess it could go either way. I could imagine Roman looking at Paul on, you know, side-eyeing him a little bit on Friday going, yeah, you know, I know at the end you kind of jabbed Cody, but you guys had a little chemistry there for a while. Anything I need to worry about? You know, I mean, I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they need to do that. But it says something about the segment that even, you know, comes up in an email there.
Yeah, it certainly does, but I don't think they'll go in that direction just yet. I would hold off on that for a little bit because they're invested in Cody as the top face. It certainly seems by all accounts, so I think they're going to wait.
They want to ride that out as long as they can, if not indefinitely. I don't think Cody being a heel is inevitable in WWE, but... And I think they're going to – I don't think it's inevitably part of the game plan of Cody and Paul Levesque and like, oh, well, you know, you'll have a heel run in you. I mean, I think Cody would be happy, you know, at his age, you know, mid going on late 30s just to not have a run as a heel. I think he likes being a babyface. So we'll see if that works out. You know, it'll take some steering around potholes to make sure, you know, to add the odds that they get that wish if that is their wish. All right. He says, I found the main event, Becky and Bayley, lame. My opinion is probably colored by the fact that this match has been promoted for weeks, skipped during Raw 30, and my own expectations and idea of an opportunity. Instead of the match occurring at a show that had the largest audience in 3 years, it got pushed to the third hour of just another Raw, squeezed into the final 15 minutes, which isn't necessarily a bad thing since there's 52 shows a year. However, the opportunity for a special, memorable match, if you will, a barn burner, well, it was just an okay match. That didn't really matter. The point of the match wasn't Becky versus Bayley. It was so they could get lead in, most likely getting a Lita Bayley match at WrestleMania. What could have been the opportunity they had? They seemed not to take advantage of that. Thanks for all the hard work and podcast. The content is great and fun. Don't skip on the opportunity to go VIP, everyone. Thank you, Ed. Appreciate that. I did not ask. I do not know if Lita was there at Raw 30. Did she appear in some other way at Raw 30? I don't think so.
I don't think so. No.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if she was there when the cage match was canceled. They're like, oh, sorry, are you available like in a couple of weeks? You know, if they had this planned for that night or not, I don't know. It seems like they very well might have. I mean, it would have made sense for her to be in the building. It would have made more sense, actually, for her to be in the building at Raw 30 than it was for her to be there tonight, because if Becky didn't need her help, it would have been kind of weird to just be hanging out. But,
right,
you know, veterans, legends do that. But, yeah, I mean, the match was never going to matter. Becky Bayley is a cage match. That's not how you start a feud that culminates a month or two later. That's a blow-off, and it was going to be setting something else up. And I'm actually kind of glad we got through it, and I think they're moving on to other things. We'll see. I mean, it's tough to follow up a cage match. It's like Ricky Starks beating Chris Jericho at the beginning of the feud with Jericho Appreciation Society. It's like, well, now him beating Jack Swagger or Jake Hager doesn't really mean anything. Beating, you know, Magic Matt doesn't mean – Daddy Magic. It's like, where do you go now? So to me, it's like, yeah, this is a sign that they're going to go somewhere else, and that probably was a plan all along. Darren, any thoughts on that?
No, just kind of basically what we talked about. Yeah, I think they might continue the damage control thing just a little bit just to fill some time over the next couple of weeks, but I think it's pretty much over.
Yeah, I mean, we might get a tag match with Lita and Becky right together, and then that leads to maybe Becky and Lita against each other. We'll see. All right, it's JB from Detroit up next. I hate to be the party pooper, but does Lita interfering in the cage match feel completely random and forced here? Lita hasn't ever really established any connection with either Becky or Bayley to make it make sense for her to fly into Orlando to even the numbers. It's almost as if Triple H and team knew that 2 weeks ago was an incredibly disappointing finish for fans and wanted to make up for it with a star-studded ending where it didn't end up belonging. I also think they might be scrambling for a viable opponent for Bayley at Mania, and Lita can fill that bill. So, yeah, they could go that direction. Do you think that we'll get a tag match of Becky and Lita against Damage Control at the Chamber? And also, if they're burning Lesnar Lashley at the Chamber, what will each of them be doing at Mania? As always, love the show and go VIP. So some good questions there, Darren. Pick any of them. Do you think Bayley Lita makes some sense? We already said we kind of think there might be a tag match. Do you think that's at the Chamber? And Lesnar Lashley, what's next for them?
I was hoping it would be Lesnar against Gunther, but I'm not sure that's going to happen. But you can always put them in our Money in the Bank, which was the breaking news that we had tonight. Courtesy of Damian Priest.
Well, it was a slip-up, not a confirmation.
Right.
Like, he paused and said, oh, I'm flustered. And then he corrected himself and said, I mean the Elimination Chamber. But it could have been a Freudian slip.
Right. As far as Lashley, I guess we'll see something maybe on the horizon with the Hurt Business finally getting together and see how that plays out, something involving them, I suppose. Maybe Lesnar finally gets some teammates or something and they have some kind of match,
mm-hmm,
something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't thought a lot about it, but, yeah, Lesnar Gunther would be great and would explain a little bit the showcase moment he had. If it was, maybe it was just planting a seed for Gunther Cody way down the line when they think, you know, they need that to be a main event and you've planted a seed here. But they plant seeds sometimes in Survivor Series elimination matches and especially the Royal Rumble. And we think, oh, that's something that'll happen later. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, for all kinds
right
of reasons.
Okay. It could be interesting to see Lesnar recruit partners, though. That could be a fun storyline to go up against a Hurt Business.
Yeah. It's
the angle they could take.
Lesnar and the Street Profits against...
Oh, my gosh.
Lashley and Shelton. And
that would be entertaining, yes.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Joe from New York also talked about the main event. Hey, guys, tonight's main event took the show from average to very good. I have to give Becky and Bayley credit. They got a lot done in 21 minutes that they were given. At first, when I saw the intros at 10:37 p.m., I thought, damn, they're not going to give it enough time. But it turned out to be just about right. I thought both had a strong match. I thought this was Bayley's best match since she came back from her injury. I really thought she should have won. She could have used the win. It will be interesting to see how Lita plays into this going forward. Are we heading to some tag matches with Lita and Becky against Damage Control? Also, are we doing a Hall of Fame this year? Just about 6 weeks and no names. The Hall of Fame has taken a major hit since the pandemic and the two-night format of WrestleMania. I'd say do it SummerSlam weekend, but since they do the major pay-per-views on Saturdays now, there's really not a good time to do it. I don't think Friday night after SmackDown's a great idea because you're starting the show at 10 p.m. Eastern. I really think they should think about turning the three-hour Raw the night after Mania into the Hall of Fame show. That way you got 3 hours, pick four people, give them 3 hours. I think it's time to change the format to the night after WrestleMania. I remember last year's show did not have the normal buzz like the other night after WrestleMania shows in past years did. Making it the Hall of Fame show might work. Your thoughts. So Joe's got some positive things about Becky Bailey and some of the same thoughts we had about what it might mean. As far as the Hall of Fame, yeah, I mean, man, if you go into our archives that we run 5 and 10 years ago shows, I mean, it was Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame. Everybody wanted their, you know, when will Randy Savage get inducted? And, you know, talking to politics. And it's like, everybody's in. Like, honestly, if they said we're taking a 4-year break from doing the Hall of Fame to restock the bullpen or, you know, I don't know what metaphor to use, but, you know, to build some anticipation again, it might be good. You know, I mean, it's a tradition, but Joe lists all the negatives, you know, all the drawbacks. So I don't know. By the way, do you think they did enough with Lanny Poffo? A brief mention and commentary by Cole Friday, and not, I don't think they did anything tonight. Unless
I didn't hear anything tonight. I was a little surprised by that he didn't at least get a graphic because he was, I mean, he had a major presence.
Yeah.
And he was related to one of their, you know, big major stars. I was kind of surprised he didn't get a graphic.
I just wonder, I mean, you know, 68 isn't young, it's not old, but somebody who, you know, purported to be as healthy in terms of his diet and, you know, he was living in a condo in Ecuador, just seemed to be, you know, loving life. And, you know, I know someone who was with him at a wedding just a couple of days before he died, and he was Lanny telling jokes, sometimes telling the same jokes more than once and laughing at his own jokes. It was a bit quintessential Lanny. I love Lanny. I loved interviewing him. He was just such a sweet guy, and he had just gotten to seeing Wicked, and he was looking forward to traveling, I think it was to Baltimore, for an autograph signing show with Pete Rose, and he had a poem already ready to read to Pete Rose. You know, and it's, I don't know, I felt really bad because I know Lanny had a lot of life he really wanted to live, and so I need to ask around a little bit about why I think he got on the very low end of what people with his level of the family name, and you know, he was with Mr. Perfect, he had a program with Hulk Hogan, which he, you know, gushed about, and all those years being a jobber but reading poetry, he's an iconic figure of, you know, kind of the mid-late 80s into the 90s in WWF history. So I'm still sad about that. But, yeah, Darren, anything else about the Hall of Fame?
Well, I mean, this would be a perfect year to put him in. I don't think he's in. So this would be a good year to put him in and, you know, kind of make up for not mentioning him very much.
If they're, you know, Lanny died of heart failure and he was otherwise healthy, but he had used steroids in his career. I can imagine WWE being nervous about that, you know? And I mean, people say, oh, it's, you know, genetics this and look what happened with his brother and all that. But you can have a genetic predisposition to something that something else exacerbates. And, you know, we've seen a lot of that in wrestling history, and people don't talk about steroids as much as they used to for all kinds of reasons. But we're now entering that zone that a lot of the old timers, you know, told the guys of the steroid generation, you guys aren't going to make it to 50 or 60 or 70 doing what you're doing. And, you know, they're, you know, grumpy in their 80s and 90s right now saying told you so to some of these things. And, you know, I think WWE's cognizant and concerned about that. And, you know, I don't know if Lanny's one of those cases or not, but certainly steroids have had an impact on hearts, especially, and the lives of wrestlers of that generation already. And so, you know, WWE just might be not wanting to draw a lot of attention to it. But I think by doing less of a tribute for Lanny than they should, it leads to me wondering out loud why. You know what I mean? Like, give us a graphic and have a, you know, air a poem and move on. You know, but give people that. All right. Grant emailed and said, so with Shelton and Cedric clearly back with MVP, do you think the way they get the Hurt Business back together is having them finally help Lashley put Brock away at Mania? So yeah, I mean, we, you know, we just sort of covered that. I don't know. I mean, Darren, do you think Shelton and Cedric have credibility, enough credibility to, just because MVP's hanging out with them again after all the losses they've taken and how marginalized they've been and how they've been portrayed? I mean, like, Corey Graves can go, yeah, well, they needed something. You know, I mean, he's acknowledging reality, and I like that he did that. But I don't know that you can – I mean, they're talented, but I don't know that you can turn around and just all of a sudden have people take them seriously after how they've been treated the last couple of years.
No, it's going to take some work because, I mean, they really devalued them. I mean, because they're – I'm really a big fan of them, and they just treat them like nothing. And it's going to take a lot to rebuild them. It's going to take more than just a victory over the Alpha Academy to rehab
yes.
them. It can be done, but it's going to take a lot more effort than that.
Yeah. All right, Zach in Texas said, I have to start this email off by thanking Beth Phoenix for glam slamming Dominic into oblivion. It was such a beautiful sight. I could watch it on loop. I'm so ready for Edge to kill his creation once and for all. Now onto a more serious problem. I did love Edge. I said I didn't like his some of his, you know, bad dad joke lines in the promo. But I did like when he goes, you know, everyone is better off than they were a year ago. And then he listed, you know, Finn Balor, Damian Priest, and Rhea Ripley. And he goes, and then there's Dominic. Now on a more serious problem, the Cody Sami Zayn thing is only going to get worse. Cody feels like he hired a bunch of PR people and image consultants and workshopped the most generic white meat baby face presentation possible. Smooth, no edges, and totally inoffensive. All his promos feature his late father and daughter as sympathy-evoking buzzwords. I thought Dom used his dad's name, but my goodness, Cody is absolutely abusing his father's name and memory to build this match. Anyway, if it gets to that point, I fully expect his go-home promo to feature Brandy and their daughter, a giant photo of Dusty, and a balloon drop. Meanwhile, Sammy, I would, you know, that sounds crazy over the top and totally Cody and Brandy-like. That honestly, I still think the turning point for Cody was the gender reveal.
The reveal.
Oh, my God. how unself-aware that was.
Oh, my.
There's only one royal family. There's more than one royal family. All right. Meanwhile, Sammy is ironically the common man underdog face everyone loves. Cody's name got booed Friday. Sammy got a mega pop. How does Cody combat this after Elimination Chamber? Well, it's one of the reasons to watch every week, folks, is what happens. I don't know. I'm excited to know. You know, I want to see it play out. Cody is smart. Cody
yeah.
is flawed and quirky and sometimes unself-aware. But there's an earnestness and a passion, and he is a fan, and he has star power. I mean, you can make a list of reasons it's going to work and a list of reasons it's not going to. And so who knows? But like I said, there's some smart people working on this problem. You know, there's some smart people working under the hood. And so, you know, stay tuned, everybody. It's going to be fun. Anything else, Darren, you want to cover here before we sign off?
I had one small note.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is petty or oversight, but I noticed
petty.
That they shouted out Bad Bunny winning a Grammy.
Yeah.
And you know, they said whatever they called him, a WrestleMania participant, Bad Bunny. But I noticed there was no mention of Batista having the number one movie in the country over the weekend.
Well, they did help make that happen. You think they would have bragged about it since
right.
they did those segments with Batista. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I get the sense that Batista's not, you know, I don't know. I don't know what happened last time with him, but boy, did he seem checked out. It seems like there's kind of mixed feelings with him. But if they ante up and pay money, you know, they'll feature him in those commercials. But there's not a lot of celebrating
no.
of Batista's legacy.
And as eager as they are to jump on any kind of mainstream thing, it just really stands out.
Yeah. By the way, I not that it would have been made sense to wedge it into the show tonight, but they could have. It was, I believe, 20 years ago that Legacy formed, that Triple H formed Legacy. I think that was it, because we put up our flashback episode or my flashback report on Raw from 20 years ago, and so that's up at pwtorch.com, by the way, if people want to read that. And Triple H caught this promo and Rick. Oh no, yeah, it was. What did I say? Legacy or Evolution?
Legacy. You said Legacy. But...
Yeah, yeah. So with Evolution and yeah, and so yeah, it just that was 20 years ago. So I'm surprised that they didn't talk about Evolution forming 20 years ago this week. But you can read what I wrote about it. No, you can't. You can read what Jason Powell wrote about it. Now that I did the 10 years ago report, but Jason did the 20 years ago Raw report. So you can read what Jason Powell published on pwtorch.com 20 years ago about that segment. That is up on pwtorch.com right now. Chris Jericho headlined 20 years ago. Do you know against whom?
20 years ago against Randy Orton.
Scott Steiner.
Would have never guessed that.
Wow. Who did William Regal team with in a tag team 20 years ago?
Okay. This is past the Tajiri thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, was it Lance Storm?
Yes. Good.
Was it?
Yes. Yes. That was awesome. You get way more points for that.
Wow.
So now Booker T teamed with whom against William Regal and Lance Storm?
I'll say Goldust.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
No. Who did Rosie and Jamal wrestle?
Rosie and Jamal. Who was around back then?
They beat him in 1:13 when Rico made a fast count.
When Rico made a...
Rico.
La Resistance?
No, the Dudleys.
Oh. Okay.
Anyway, these reports are fun.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
I got the Dudleys.
All right, who did D'Lo wrestle?
D'Lo was there 20 years ago.
Yeah. He was on Raw 20 years ago this week.
D'Lo. Okay.
His opponent was Tough Enough.
It was someone from Tough Enough?
I said his opponent was Tough Enough.
Oh, okay. So.
It's a clue.
Maven?
Yeah, it was Maven. Yeah. Yeah. Trying to see if you could impress people by not drawing attention to my clue there. Anyway, it's fun stuff. We've been putting up lately, semi-regularly, the 5 to 10 and 20 years ago house show flashbacks and Raw SmackDown reports and stuff. So kind of fun to see what was going on.
Definitely.
Back then and what we had to say about it. So check that out, people, at pwtorch.com. All right. And see what Paul Heyman was up to, too. 10 years ago, he was wishing Vince McMahon a quick road to recovery after Vince's Royal Rumble mishap. So, fun stuff. All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us to the very end here. We look forward to talking to you Wednesday night after Dynamite and Friday night after SmackDown. Thanks, Darren, for your time and all your thoughts and opinions and insights on tonight's show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody.